This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Given the outcome of Super Tuesday elections and the predetermination of presidential candidates, one might think that Wisconsin's April 2nd primary is inconsequential. But you'd be wrong. There are two constitutional amendment questions on Wisconsin's April ballot and groups behind the scenes trying to influence your vote. Today, we welcome two of those groups here, Dr. Will Flanders, the research director with Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, and Deborah Cronmiller, the executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we want to back up just a little bit before we get into the meat of these questions. I'd like to start with, if you could help explain to our viewers, what is a constitutional amendment? What's its purpose?
Absolutely. So constitutional amendments in Wisconsin, they're sort of a set process that they go through to be put on the ballot. They have to pass the state legislature two consecutive sessions, and then they appear on the ballot for the public to decide whether or not the issue should be approved or not approved.
So I know the League does a lot of voter education around all sorts of issues. So can a constitutional amendment be removed, or is it a permanent part of the law then?
It's permanent once it passes and the people approve it. The our Constitution in Wisconsin has been amended 148 times since it was first created. And many of those amendments were to undo a previous amendment. So it's a serious business to amend our Constitution, but most of the Constitution, the way it was written years ago, still stand as best practices today.
All right, let's get into this first of the two questions that are actually on the ballot in a few weeks. This first constitutional amendment says, shall Section 7, Subsection 1 of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that private donations and grants may not be applied for, accepted, expended, or used in connection with the conduct of any primary election or referendum, and then voters must choose either yes or no. Now, Will, I know that your organization supports this constitutional amendment. It has its roots in the 2020 election when millions of private funding came in through a nonprofit called the Center for Center for Technology and Civic Life. And sometimes the funds are called Zuckerbucks because of their donation from Mark Zuckerberg, who is with Facebook, as many people know. So can you tell us, what is the issue with that funding? Why did it move to a constitutional amendment?
Yeah, so I think that, as you say, this stems from the 2020 election. And we know that, there was a lot of issues that were brought forth, both ones that are sort of defensible, within the law, and things that are maybe conspiracy theories. I think this is one of the areas where we had something brought forth that actually was a real problem. What we see in the 2020 election was that, as you said, millions of dollars were poured into Wisconsin, larger and disproportionate amounts to the larger cities in the state, and that was used for a number of different practices for election engineering. There were get-out-the-vote efforts that were funded by this. There were things like the Racine voter van, which was funded by this, which was later declared by a circuit court judge to be against the law. So we think, take the partisanship out of it, or at least think about the shoe being on the other foot here. Think of a group that, folks on the left tend to think of as a boogeyman, right? Think of, the Koch brothers or some of that nature. I'd ask folks, would you want someone like the Koch brothers coming in and primarily funding elections in only conservative-leaning parts of the state? I think many folks would say no to that question. And I think since, we can see the other side is a negative, I think we should consider not approving this amendment.
Deborah, in that 2020 election, how were those private funds used? Were they essential? This was during the pandemic.
Correct. Yes, the grant agreement signed by over 200 municipalities in the state of Wisconsin that accepted those dollars very specifically said that they could be used for only nonpartisan purposes. And so respectfully have to disagree that that was a partisan intention. The League of Women Voters has recently produced a webinar trying to teach our voters about the consequences of this amendment should it pass. And what we're hearing from municipal leaders across the state is that private donations have been available to them for many, many years, long before 2020. And they're very important because city municipal budgets do not always have enough resources to fully fund elections, especially if there's a special election or recall election, things that may not have made it into the original city budget. And these external dollars can really be critically important so taxpayers don't have to bear the whole burden of election administration in the state.
So 2020 seems to be a little bit of an outlier in terms of the amount of funds that came into the state. But with this amendment, what's an example of something that election administrators maybe rely on a private donation funding for that would be no longer allowable?
There's many purposes of election dollars. When you go to an election, you see poll workers, you'll see greeters. You know these are people who are paid by municipalities to do those jobs, and that those costs can be offset by private dollars. We also have costs of just holding an election. You need a place to have the election, you know, held, the polling place. You need paper ballots. You need election equipment, which is actually the highest cost to a municipality, is the purchase and update and upkeep of election equipment. So it's so many costs associated with elections, and not always does a municipality have the resources and funding available to run elections in the best manner possible.
And I know that your organization has said that those funds that came in during the 2020 election contributed to a lot of concerns that particularly Republicans have around election integrity. Why would you say that those funds had an impact on election integrity?
Yeah, so I think the point to make here is, you know, not that the funds were distributed within the community in a partisan way, but rather more liberal-leaning communities were more likely to get large amounts of money. And so if you're sort of either strategically or not, it doesn't even have to be strategic, if you're giving more funding to areas of the state that lean a particular direction, naturally doing get-out-the-vote efforts and things like that, you'll see a partisan impact. So I think that's the chief basis of the concern, is that whoever's doing this, right or left, there's the danger of a partisan impact from folks that either strategically or just because those are the folks that apply, get more money towards election funding than other areas of the state that either don't apply or don't receive as much money in a grant.
How do you respond to that?
Well, I respectfully disagree. I think that the dollars are available to any municipality across the state. There is an application that is completed by the municipality, and anyone can apply. You know, so the 200 communities that applied in 2020, you know, each community was funded. And it really behooves the community to make that decision. Are we going to apply for these external funds? Already this cycle, we have the applications out to communities, and some communities we know are applying again. And because, you know, frankly, they need the resources, and without the gap-filling resource from the center, their elections may not be administered in the highest quality way that we would hope.
I know you had mentioned the question of election integrity and causing. Would you say, are there more concerns by Republican voters that were created because of this funding?
I think that's exactly right. You know, we see across the country right now, right, that there's a lot of folks that don't have faith in our election process. And as I said in the beginning, you know, there are some areas that were brought up that there's not really any basis in fact for, but this is one of those areas where we actually could make a change. And there is some evidence of, not necessarily impropriety, but that there was a partisan effect of these dollars. And even if there is the process, which there is, you know, that anyone can apply, this doesn't preclude another actor, someone with bad intentions, from only funding elections in certain areas of the state that are politically aligned. So I think even if you sort of take everything off the table with the Zuckerbucks funding itself, we don't want to go down the slippery slope of other actors coming in and funding areas in a more nakedly partisan way.
I know the League, in your educational materials, you say that prohibiting our state from receiving grants to fund our elections doesn't
improve election integrity, it worsens it. How would this change worsen election integrity?
Well, as I was indicating before, elections are serious business, and they have many moving parts in order to administer election well. And without enough resources to maintain our election equipment to, you know, in the case of 2020, we needed, for the first time ever, all sorts of protective equipment, you know, shields and sanitizer and, you know, we see images of our polling places in they're just transformed in a very short amount of time, and to make elections safe for voters. And these dollars really helped be able to do that, because again, not monies that were budgeted before we all knew we were going to have a pandemic. So it really did help. And you know, throughout Wisconsin and our most red cities and our most blue cities, dollars were accepted for just that purpose. That plexiglass cost money. The, you know, having a pen available to only one person, that's different than having, you know, a cup of pens that people throughout the day will use. And those were the you know, real tangible things that were purchased in 2020 to keep voters safe, to keep poll workers safe, and to ensure that that election could go off.
There's been some general criticism of constitutional amendment questions on the ballot about ambiguity of language, that sometimes those questions give voters incomplete information. And that criticism has come down on this particular question that's on the ballot. Let's look at the language that actually will change the Constitution if question one passes. That language says the Constitution will be amended to read, no state agency or officer or employee in state government and no political subdivision of the state or officer or employee of a political subdivision may apply for, accept, expend, or use any monies or equipment in connection with the conduct of any primary, election, or referendum if the monies or equipment are donated or granted by an individual or non-governmental entity. Deborah, I'll start with you first. What do you see as any significant difference between that language that's in that ballot question and how the Constitution will change?
Well, as our voters in Wisconsin are becoming quite aware, the question on the ballot does not say what you just said. The question on the ballot is a much bigger kind of theoretical change to the Constitution. And for me, I think what's really critically important is that people understand what's really going to change in the Constitution, how prohibitive it will be, and more importantly, what's not in that language. What's not in that language is how will elections be funded. Our municipalities around the state have taken dollars, private dollars, to fund elections and other purposes of government for many, many, many years, decades. There's not a place in this particular constitutional amendment that says how we're going to backfill that hole. And I think for a municipality that's taking, you know, a small municipality maybe taking thousands of dollars, larger municipalities taking millions of dollars to help fill those holes, the where's that money going to come from? And do taxpayers understand, though they're looking at my pockets now, because that will be the only recourse.
Do you think there's a problem with the difference in the language between the question and the constitutional change?
I mean, I think it's always hard to write the ballot question in a way that totally conforms with what the language is going to be in the Constitution is. I think that ultimately, I think that it does do a pretty good job of capturing this language, though, of course, there's always going to be, you know, complexities that are difficult to capture. You know, in terms of do we need more funding for elections from the public sector, I think the thing we'd come back to is saying the cure can't be worse than the disease, right? And if there is a problem with election funding, we have a process in the state where we can seek to get more funding for elections, you know, going through the legislative process, working with the legislature and the governor. We think the prospect of private funding at the large scale that we've seen here is worse than, you know, asking taxpayers to maybe pay a little more for something that is a very key government role.
So it sounds like you both agree that there needs to be more funding for elections, election administration. Will your organizations be working to advocate for additional funding for elections?
We have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'd like to see what is brought forth, but I think there is a sort of avenue where we'd be supportive of that. I mean, when you know, I've testified before Congress a few weeks ago, and you know, one thing that was clear across both the Democrats and Republicans on the committee there on this issue was that there was a recognition of If we're going to ban private funding, maybe there's some more room for public spending on these issues. So I think there is room for that.
Didn't the governor veto a bill that basically also included this prohibition on private funding? And what does it mean for a vetoed piece of legislation to move to constitutional amendment?
In order for this language to be enacted, it did have to go to constitutional amendment because the governor used his veto to strike down what the legislature had proposed. And that, for me, causes another question here about process. We have a process for enacting legislation and for amending our constitution, as was discussed before. But, you know, when our governor uses his executive authority and the legislature doesn't like that response, you know, they're taking it to the people. But this becomes a separation of powers issue for me. The legislature did its job. It created a bill, passed it, went to the governor for signature. Governor vetoed it. That should be a done deal now, as it is with all legislation that's produced in the state of Wisconsin and around the country. Bringing it back to the people is questionable in my mind as to whether or not it is that the right process. Should the legislature, if it wanted to pass this piece of legislation, they have a means to, you know, come back and basically overturn using their majority vote, and they couldn't do that, and they didn't do that.
You think this issue is so important it requires a constitutional amendment?
I think that's right. I mean, I think that, you know, as you mentioned, we had over 140 constitutional amendments in Wisconsin of varying quality over the years, right, and some of which have repealed prior amendments. So I think this issue, given that it involves the integrity of the election, given that it involves questions that a lot of people have about whether they can have faith in the outcome of the election, I think this absolutely deserves to be decided by the people of the state.
You mentioned that you testified before Congress a few weeks ago on this issue. There's been 27 states that have enacted similar laws prohibiting or restricting the use of outside private funds for election administration. Do you think that that CTCL money impacted the outcome of the 2020 election in Wisconsin?
So I think, you know, in isolation, when you look at the communities that got CTCL funding, there is a relationship between the percentage change in the vote from 2016 to 2020 for President Biden in those communities more than communities that didn't get those funds. So I think there's some evidence of that. Would I say this was the end-all, be-all, definitive, you know, determining factor? Absolutely not. But again, if we open the floodgates to funding in the future, these things could become even more determinative.
All right, let's move on to the second question on the April ballot. It has to do with who can administer elections and perform election tasks. This question says, shall Section 7, Subsection 2 of Article 3 of the Constitution be created to provide that only election officials designated by law may perform tasks in the conduct of primaries, elections, and referendums? The actual change in the Constitution says that no individual other than an election official may perform those tasks. There's a slight difference. What does Wisconsin law say, Deborah, about who is an election official currently?
Wisconsin law is actually kind of vague about this, but it does indicate that we have certain people who are charged with the administration of our elections. And it starts with our chief inspectors, our poll workers, you know, and there are many people associated with the administration of election that have a role as, you know, defined in statute. And this will limit, the league sort of believes that this is unnecessary. This is already in statute, and I get it that you can overturn a statute a little bit easier than you can amend the Constitution, but we've been following these rules for decades. There hasn't been a question about who's administering our elections, and I really don't think that it's a necessary amendment. And as we've seen with some of the 148 amendments that have come before to our Constitution, sometimes we have to rethink those choices after the fact because the amendment itself is not helping the people of Wisconsin. Wisconsin.
Is this another amendment that comes out of concerns from the 2020 election?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we saw in 2020 is that there were certainly, it was the appearance of impropriety in places like Green Bay, where folks associated with Zuckerbucks, with CTCL, were brought in and given access to absentee ballots, given access to sort of help with the curing process. So I think there's certainly the appearance of impropriety there. I don't think any of those things have been, borne out entirely, but I haven't really seen a lot of folks dispute that they did happen. And I think, again, it's the same idea as what we discussed on the previous question largely. Let's remove these factors that give people the reason to doubt the outcome. And when you have folks that are not, state elections officials or local election officials in the area, in the vicinity, that leads to a lot of questions that seem unnecessary, even if there's no bad activity actually happening.
Does the leak have a concern that if this is put into the state constitution, that there'll be certain people who help out now with elections that might not be able to because they aren't a technical election official?
Yes. We have a concern that we might not be present in polling places across the state because we're not defined in statute right now, whereas observers from the parties are defined. So it leaves a lot of question. There's a vagueness to the, what's being changed here in our Constitution. And I think it's, I want to go back to, the idea that we're doing this to create a solution to a problem. I dispute that we have a problem. Our elections in Wisconsin have always been safe, secure, accessible, recountable. We have a paper trail, and we have guidance that's provided to every election administrator across the state from WEC that is very prescriptive about what they can and cannot do, how election, how ballots are printed, how they're distributed, how absentee ballots are distributed, witness signature requirements, all things that are in place to protect our election process here in Wisconsin. And, frankly, the notion that we need to have more protections, I think it's just a false assumption.
We talked a little bit about the history of amending Wisconsin's Constitution. I know last year there was an amendment question on the ballot related to cash bail. We have these two questions here in April, and there's three more coming up, I think, in August and November. Is this something new that we seem to be seeing more questions more frequently on the ballot?
Yeah.
Why is this happening?
Yeah, I think that we've seen, 148 constitutional amendments in 150 years, and we're seeing just an uptick in the number of questions being asked in any particular legislative session. And, from my vantage point, it does appear that this is a legislature trying to exercise power that they don't have, and they were trying to prevent the governor's office from using its powers bestowed in our Constitution. And it's an issue with our democracy as much as it is with a specific ballot question, the wording, the vagueness, that sort of thing, but rather a questioning of, why? Why are we doing this, and why are we doing it so frequently at this particular juncture?
Is there a good reason why a state might choose to update and amend its constitution rather than going through the legislative process and updating statute?
Yeah, well, I think, to the point about, is this in favor, sort of supportive of democracy, I think actually it's hard to be more small d democratic than to go to the people, right, to answer some of these questions directly. So, are there reasons that, that it might be along partisan lines why some of these things are happening? I think that's the case, but I think this is a mechanism that was put in place originally, with the state constitution to allow for sort of this other alternative means of getting a change enacted.
So we talked about the two questions on the April ballot. Let's preview what voters might be seeing on the August and November ballots. Three more questions. We're summarizing them here, not sharing the actual ballot language. The general topics of what will be those three questions have to do with prohibiting non-citizens from voting in local, state, and federal elections. The second area of questioning addresses who controls the approval and expenditure of federal funds that come to the state, whether that is the legislative branch
branch or the executive branch. This that particular question around federal funding, that comes from a lot of the federal COVID dollars that came into the state that Governor Evers was able to distribute. Does your organization have a position on that?
Yeah, so I think our position would be that, you know, as we do with state funding, as we do with, you know, the legislative process in general, let's have these dollars go the same way, go through the same process that they would go through, you know, were they state dollars. Let's let the legislature have an input as well where this money is spent. What we have seen in the last couple of years is the governor sort of by executive fiat is going out and, you know, handing out these federal dollars, whether, you know, whether politically motivated to some of those places or not. You seem to see a lot more of it right before, you know, right before the election. So I think we should use federal dollars in the same way that we do. We should let the people as voice in the Assembly and the Senate have a role in how those dollars are spent.
Will the League be educating voters on that particular question
we
as well?
We absolutely will be. The governor's power is secure in the Constitution, you know, that he's the executive, and there's very good reasons to allow the governor to retain this power and to not have it in the legislature. One of them is what we saw in 2020. Their legislature did not convene. So how would they have distributed these dollars? How would they have put in place emergency orders that were necessary? And, you know, every time we have a natural disaster in the state of Wisconsin, it's the governor who uses this authority to put in place the use of federal disaster relief funds. If that would have to go through the legislature, you know, are they coming convening into special session if they're out of session? How do we do the work of government if we take the powers away as they're currently distributed in the Constitution to each of our branches of government?
Regarding the other topic area and those questions, aren't non-citizens already prohibited from voting in our elections?
Non-citizens are currently prohibited by the definition that's in the state constitution theoretically, but this clarifies the language around it because the current language doesn't preclude non-citizens. It defines who is eligible to vote, but not what what a non-citizen can do. So we think this, again, is clarifying language that could help people have more faith that only U.S. citizens are participating in the election process.
Does the League have a position?
We absolutely have a position, and it's contrary. We believe that this particular ballot question is complicated in that people don't necessarily understand what's in our state constitution and federal constitution that does prohibit a non-citizen from voting in state and federal races. What this adds on is that local component. And for us, you know, the League has long advocated for local control. And it's not the state's job to tell a municipality who can vote in their local elections. Local elections, you know, are across the board big local questions, you know, sanitation, water quality, you know, there's so many questions, school district races, you know, that local people should have the ability to decide the answers to those questions. And this is saying top down, locality, you can't allow all of your residents to vote. You can only allow your citizen residents to vote. And that begs questions of how do you prove you're a citizen? You know, you don't come out of the womb with a card that says I was born in the United States. It's a difficult prospect and confusing. And from the League standpoint, you know, long before we had suffrage in 1920, women voted in municipal races, you know, for school board, for local decisions. And it was the precursor to what gave women the feeling of entitlement that we could vote in all of the races. And ultimately, you know, that battle took 72 years before 1920 to get the vote, but it was because women were practiced voters, and non-citizens can be practiced voters too if the municipality so chooses.
Sounds like more education to come on all of those question areas before August and November elections. So we are rounding out our time, and I want to give you both opportunity to kind of summarize our conversation today. I'll start with you, Will. If there's a voter out there in Wisconsin who's thinking, I might not vote in April, there's not really much of importance on this ballot, what's your elevator speech to them?
Sure.
As to why they need to show up
Yeah, as you say, with the primary process completed, it does seem that way to someone who's not looking at issues like we've been looking at today. But I think regardless of where you come down on these topics that we discuss, and they're good points on both sides, I think it's important to have a say in these sorts of issues that are really critical to the state and how our elections are run in the future, and some of the other questions that are on the later ballot. So I definitely encourage folks to use the exercise their right to vote and have their say on these issues.
Deborah? I agree 100%. People need to vote in every election. The April election is a significant local race election. It's our nonpartisan elections. We elect judges. We elect city officers, county officers. These are critically important races, and every voter should be there to have their voice heard. And there's no sitting out any election, especially elections with important questions like these constitutional amendment questions on the ballot.
All right. Thank you for the wonderful conversation today.
Thank you.
And thank you to our viewers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.